makeshift maternity ward had been established. Sailors and authorized personnel darted every which way as we progressed through the corridors.
"Step aside, please."
Two sailors ran past us with a stack of blankets. Announcements squawked through the public address speaker. We arrived on the promenade deck. Amelia dropped my hand.
"I want to leave. Want to be outside," she whispered.
"Let's get you settled. You'll feel better in a moment," I assured her. I found Dr. Richter. He directed us to what would be the maternity ward. Cots with crisp white linen sat in uniform rows.
"You are the very first mother to arrive," Dr. Richter told Amelia. "We're hoping to have another doctor on board, but we haven't received confirmation yet."
Amelia said nothing. "It's all quite overwhelming for her," I explained. "Her condition, the trek, the language barrier, being separated from her husband."
"Of course," said the doctor. "But I can solve one of the problems. Many of the passengers will be multilingual. Once boarding begins, I'll find someone who speaks Latvian."
Dr. Richter patted Amelia's shoulder.
"Don't you worry. Soon you can tell us absolutely everything."
He turned and walked out of the maternity ward. Amelia's nails dug into my arm.
Amelia, what was I going to do? Should I run? My panic seemed to increase the pain and cramping below my waist. "Don't worry," insisted Joanna. "I'll think of something." I hated the ship. It was steel, lifeless, and hollow inside. I would rather be in a small wooden boat carved from an old tree, or even a floating nutshell. I detested steel birds and boats. These sterile boats were not made to appreciate the sea. Boats of steel were boats of war. Part of me hoped they would send me away, tell me that I didn't belong, that I should run back to the forest and the birds. Joanna said the Wilhelm Gustloff was a KDF ship. I knew what that meant. August had told me. KDF. Kraft durch Freude. Strength through joy. KDF was a national German organization that was supposed to make leisure activities available to the masses, regardless of social class. Hitler said KDF brought opportunity for everyone. All were equal. But how could all be equal if some were favored? Like Hitler, August's mother believed in a master race. I was Polish, so in her opinion, I was not part of it. Somewhere behind the locked door in my mind, I heard the echo of Erna Kleist's stringent voice. "Not that one! This one is prettier!" The Wilhelm Gustloff was pregnant with lost souls conceived of war. They would crowd into her belly, and she would give birth to their freedom. But did anyone realize? The ship was christened for a man, Wilhelm Gustloff. My father had told me about him. He had been the leader of the Nazi Party in Switzerland. He was murdered. The ship was born of death.
Florian. I barricaded entry to the projection room, wedging items under and against the door so it could not be opened. The movie house was now overrun with refugees seeking warmth and shelter. Many had ventured upstairs, and I turned them away. My pistol sat loaded and ready. If I was going to forge a pass, I couldn't be disturbed. The Polish girl knew. I approached her when she entered the movie house, and she handed me her pass without a word. I memorized the Gothic style of the writing, the hue of the ink, traced the stamp, and made note of the terms used. Joanna's pass was slightly different from the girl's due to her assignment. It was helpful to see both. My father was overjoyed when I showed drafting and visual memory aptitude. As a small boy, I could briefly look at his maps and then draw them myself. But as I grew older, my interest wasn't in creation, but duplication. I loved the challenge of trying to precisely recreate Father's maps so he couldn't distinguish the original from the copy. He acknowledged and praised my talent, but wanted me to produce instead of reproduce. "You are so talented, Florian. Why not create something of your own? Something that comes from your imagination. As the philosophers say, life is short, but art is long. Contribute a piece of art instead of copying others, son." But I wasn't interested. I loved the idea of restoring old treasures and pieces of art. And once in a while, I liked copying them too. The handwritten parts of the boarding pass were black. The ink stamp was black. The pass would be simple to forge.
Alfred. Hello, sweet girl. How your patience must fray waiting for my letters. There are no more leisure hours or breaks on the ship. I am told that we will work around the clock until we sail. I am carefully noting and recording all details. The temperature is steady at minus 10 degrees centigrade, but the Maritime Office predicts it will dip even lower. The railings and decks on the top level of the Gustloff are encased in ice, which we are continually ordered to scrape. Fortunately, we will not be using the top deck during the voyage. Hitler calls for every German to fulfill his duty and make sacrifices. Have others made as many sacrifices as I have, Hannelore? I nearly suffocated in my vapor bath while trying to strengthen my lungs prior to deployment. You will be relieved to know that the eternal thunderstorm that once lived in my chest has finally eased. Yes, Laura. My main affliction now is simply a malady of eagerness. I feel quite empowered wearing this uniform. I am confident I shall soon receive the documentarian post I deserve. The Watchman will prevail. Following this initial voyage, I look forward to returning to my own territory. This region of East Prussia is quite strange. The East Prussians themselves are a different Germanic breed altogether, very unlike the Deutschen we know. Some of the Prussian squirearchy are now making their way to the port. One Prussian sailor told me that his family will not come. They refuse to abandon their estate. Instead, they have sent their servants toward the ships for safety. The family members have dug graves for themselves in their garden. Should the Russians arrive, they will step into the dirt pits and take their own lives. Can you imagine? The Führer is offering a means of escape, and they refuse to leave their lands. That speaks not of sacrifice, but of stupidity. It is annoying, yet somehow quietly satisfying to think of them in the cold ground.
Joanna. The hot cloth felt glorious on my face. The Wilhelm Gustloff had 50 bathrooms, 100 showers, and 145 toilets. Dr. Richter gave me a white pinafore apron and suggested that I freshen up. The woman in the mirror was frightening, especially when I realized that she was me. My face was caked with soot. My eyes ringed with grief from the things they had seen. I had lived for 21 years, but the recent months had changed me. I scrubbed at the dried blood and grime beneath my fingernails, thinking of the remorse I would never be able to wash down a sink. To assist others, to help and heal, it was a good distraction. But what would I do about Amelia? In the privacy of the bathroom, alone and unseen, the weight of the experience pressed down upon me. I missed my family, questioned the fate of my country, and feared for my cousin Lena. Survival had its price. Guilt.
Vilnius, Kaunas, my birthplace of Birger. What were the Lithuanian people experiencing? I longed to speak Lithuanian instead of German, to sing Lithuanian songs. Everything I ever loved, I had been forced to leave behind. Someone knocked on the door. I didn't respond. Some part of me did not want to leave the small steel bathroom. I wanted to stay locked away from the pain and destruction. I didn't want to be strong. I didn't want to be the smart girl. I was so very tired. I just wanted it all to be over. 4 awful years rose to the surface, and I started to cry.
Florian. The ink was dry. I slid my brushes and supplies into the leather case and returned them to my pack. I jotted some remarks in my notebook, where I had practiced the forgery. I had 2 options. I could board early and risk the officers deeply analyzing my pass and papers. Or I could wait until the boat was already full and board with the last rush of passengers. If I boarded early, I could find a place to conceal myself for the voyage. I would get extra sleep. But I would probably need the toady sailor to help me. Was it worth the risk? I looked at the paper. My pass was an excellent forgery. A wave of adrenaline hit me. I wanted to try it. Would it work, or would they apprehend me on the gangway? Hitler might lose the war, but he wouldn't be willing to surrender all the art he had stolen. Especially not the Amber Room. The Führer is a talented watercolorist. He applied to art school. Dr. Lange had lowered his voice. But the school did not accept him. Oh, how they will regret it. So instead of creating art or collecting it, Hitler stole it. Large albums with photos and lists of the items he targeted for his museum were assembled. 2 such albums had been delivered to Dr. Lange. Some of the art listed was in private homes, owned by Jewish families. Other pieces, like the Julian Fallot painting, were in museums. The Czartoryski Museum in Krakow had been pillaged. Masterpieces by Da Vinci, Rembrandt, and Raphael now hung in the private apartments of Nazi officials. Other stolen pieces were hidden in salt mines, abandoned factories, castle ruins, and the basements of museums. Dr. Lange estimated that over 50,000 pieces of art would be reassigned from Poland to Germany alone. He found this completely acceptable. But the Amber Room was the greatest treasure of all. 6 tons of pure, glistening amber, a jeweled chamber that glowed like golden fire. The panels were backed with gold leaf, the fronts inlaid with shimmering diamonds, emeralds, rubies, and jade. And, in the center of the room, in a small oval alcove, sat the prized piece, the Amber Swan. I looked down at the small box in my pack. Hitler would look for the swan first. I thought of the 27 crates hidden far below the castle in the secret cellar. The labyrinth of tunnels would make it impossible to find the secret chamber. Lange knew where it was. Koch thought he knew where it was. I not only knew where it was, I had a map to the location and a key. They were sealed in the hollow heel of my boot.
Joanna. Dr. Richter evaluated Amelia's condition.
She seems a bit traumatized, he commented.
I tried to agree with him, without raising suspicion. Yes, I whispered. I thought so too. She speaks constantly of her husband, August, a German who's fighting at the front. She's desperate to get to him since being separated from her parents. She fears he is dead. He nodded.
You mentioned you have maternity experience?
I assisted at the hospital in Insterburg.
I delivered several on my own without complication. I don't know how many expectant mothers we'll have. I have a couple of nurses and one medical orderly. I'll need you to help the wounded soldiers in the other ward as well, he said. Yes, of course. I was shocked when I saw the men this morning, I told him. We didn't see injuries of that severity in Insterburg. The doctor lowered his voice to a whisper.
I fear the condition of the men speaks loudly of Germany's fate. It's a short voyage. Let's do what we can to make them as comfortable as possible. Have you lost many?
I've lost my family, my language, and my country. I've lost it all, I wanted to say. But I knew what he meant. I lost a friend crossing the ice just yesterday. And you?
Too many to count, he replied. Tomorrow more wounded will be the first to board. I'm told we'll also have a group from a sanatorium, German girls who fell into the hands of the Russians. I suggest you get some sleep tonight. The coming days will be long.
I dragged my cot over to Amelia's and settled in next to her. We were finally surrounded by protection and comfort, sheltered from the snow, the cold, and Russian soldiers. I finally felt safe. The ship had anti-aircraft guns affixed to the deck. Tonight, I would sleep on a cot in a warm room, out of harm's way. I lay face to face with Amelia, who was still wearing her pink hat. She smiled at me. I thought of the summers in Nida with my cousin. At night, we'd lie close, noses nearly touching, whispering and giggling. Amelia reminded me so much of Lena. She had the same blonde hair and sea-blue eyes, deep, with strength and secrets.
Alfred. The temperature dropped further. I decided it was far too cold to collect life vests and floats. Instead, I marched through the passageways of the ship chanting my melody. I found that if I kept my pace at an urgent clip, no one would stop me to assign a task. So I walked and walked, oxygenating my lungs and mentally documenting all that was going on. All furniture had been cleared from the main rooms. The floors of the dining halls, the ballroom, and the music room were lined with thin mattress pads for refugees. I ran my fingers across the smooth wood of the grand piano in the music room. I then marched down the long teak walkways of the promenade decks. They were enclosed by glass and wrapped around the ship. I made my way down to E-deck, near the bottom of the ship. There was a lovely swimming area on E-deck. The pool, now drained, was still beautiful. White columns surrounded the edges of the pool under an opaque glass ceiling. At the head of the swimming room was a large mosaic depicting Neptune and mermaids swimming with fish. I liked the look of those mermaids, held captive in the tile. Hundreds of men from the U-boat service were on their way to the ship, preparing to man submarines once we reached Kiel on mainland Germany. They would be assigned to cabins on B and C decks. Party officials and important Germans would also share cabins. I marched toward the galley to see what they might be cooking. We had been told that each passenger would receive one hot meal per day. My stomach felt full of empty gas. It appeared that pea soup was to be the menu staple. "What do you need?" asked a sailor who was counting food supplies. "Just observing. I am a documentarian," I said, scribbling in the air. "What's wrong with your hands?" the sailor asked with disgust. "Nothing really. Just a bit of an irritation." "Is it contagious?" he asked. "Me? Contagious? How dare you? Watch the attitude and go to the infirmary. We don't need to be infected." The infirmary. For my hands. I could spy on the pretty nurse. Why hadn't I thought of that?
Amelia. Joanna fell asleep quickly. The pain began first in my lower back, and then moved up through my core. It was similar to the cramping I had experienced for the past few days, but more severe. I lay on the cot for several hours. It came in intervals. Just as I would fall asleep, I'd wake again with the intense pressure and pain. I pulled off my hat and wound my fingers through the pink crocheted holes in the yarn. I sang through "All the Little Duckies" in my head. A sharp pain came. I clenched my hat and teeth to keep from crying out. The pain spread, splitting through my abdomen. And then, amidst the agony, the locked door in my mind suddenly opened, and I was no longer on a cot in the ship's infirmary. I sat on the cool wooden floor outside Mama's bedroom, a bowl of black currants resting quietly in my lap. When it was over, I would sit on the edge of the bed and feed them to her. I would finally have a baby brother or sister. I had been waiting, asking, for years. Papa paced the floor of the hallway. At times, Mama would yell, trying desperately to bring my sibling into the world. It went on for hours. I became hungry. And then, just as I raised a fistful of berries to my lips, the sounds changed. Her screams of labor became screams of terror. Papa ran into the room. I sat frozen to the spot on the floor, paralyzed by the sound of Mama's voice. Then it was quiet. The midwife began crying. A clatter on the roof announced the departure of the stork. And then the midwife came into the hall to announce the departure of my Mama. I didn't believe it was happening. I thought it was a dream. I closed my eyes and opened them. "Wake up, Mama! Wake up! Please don't leave me!" I screamed. The berries dropped down the front of my dress and rolled across the floor. And now, from my cot, I spoke to my mother. "Am I going to die too, Mama?" Joanna stirred next to me. "Amelia?" I looked above at my mother and asked again, "Umria Pravda. I'm going to die now, aren't I, Mama?" Joanna flew off her cot and stuffed pillows behind my head and back. Her reaction confirmed my fear. Yes, I would die now. But unlike Mama, I would not go to heaven. My secrets padlocked the gates. I'd be a torn kite stuck in the dead branches of a tree, unable to fly. A searing pain ripped through me. Death hacked at me with its sickle, tearing, chopping, unbearable. Then, the hurt subsided. "Joanna!" I reached out for her, but she was hard at work below me. She quickly looked up and put her hand on my knee. "I'm right here, Amelia. Listen. Please, listen to me," I begged. "Yes. Think of August, Amelia." Another pain came, torturing me for my lies. It grew sharper, deeper, lynching my breath. I bit down and felt my teeth puncture the skin of my lip. The sickle was inside me, twisting and stabbing. "You must tell, Amelia. Clear your conscience. Free your soul." The pain retreated. Tears fell onto my cheeks. "Don't cry," said Joanna. "This will soon be over. Think of August, Amelia. Think of how happy you will all be." She was right. This would soon be over. A ripping slice burned through me. I screamed in agony. "You must tell, Amelia." My conscience, my shame, it all boiled over. I looked at her and shook my head, barely able to speak through my tears. "There is no August," I whispered. "There is no August."
Joanna. Gripped with pain and terror, Amelia spoke in fragmented German and Polish.
"No August, Frau Kleist, Prettier."
She kept repeating, "Frau Kleist, Frau Kleist." It made no sense. Things were moving fast. I wanted to run for Dr. Richter, but couldn't leave Amelia. She was completely overcome with fear, consumed by pain. The sailor from the port peered around the door.
"Alfred!"
"Oh, pardon me, Fräulein, I thought you might..." He stopped when he saw Amelia.
"Alfred, run to the soldiers' ward. Get Dr. Richter. Quickly!"
Amelia gripped the edges of the cot. She screamed, her body vibrating, eyes bulging. The sailor paled and looked rubbery.
"Alfred, shore up! Go get Dr. Richter!"
He turned, as if in a trance, holding the door frame and talking to himself. And then he was gone.
"Come, Amelia, breathe with me,"
I told her. We locked eyes, breathing rhythmically. Amelia stopped, her mouth pulled with pain. She screamed, words and blood pouring from her lips.
"Liar! Liar! Help me, Mama!"
I had never seen such terror. Where was Dr. Richter? I couldn't step away for the chloroform. Blood dripped from Amelia's lip. Her face was thick with sweat. She cried out again, louder, excruciating.
"Mama!"
The baby's head suddenly appeared.
"Push!"
I told her. What was the word for push in Polish? I tried to use expressions and gestures. She understood. She pushed and screamed.
"Don't stop! Push!"
She bore down, her clenched fists shaking, the pain so intense it strangled her screams. The tiny child met my hands.
"Yes, yes!"
I told her. I looked down. A perfect little bird had fluttered into my arms. Amelia gasped for breath, then sobbed and covered her face.
"Liar! Help! Mama!"
"It's over," I told her. "It's all over. You have a baby girl, Amelia. A beautiful baby girl."
Florian. I brought the shoemaker and the wandering boy up to the projection room to sleep. I cocooned the small boy in my long wool coat, folding the collar over as a headrest. He slept soundly with his rabbit and remained asleep after I woke. The shoe poet was already awake, staring at my boots.
"You altered the heel yourself. You did a fine job."
"You are a craftsman?" he asked.
"Of sorts," I said.
If he knew, would he turn me in?
6 years, said the shoemaker. "This war has stolen 6 years from the world. I was born in Germany and have lived here my entire life. I have dear friends who are Russian. They tell me the Russian people are suffering terribly. Stalin, Hitler." He lowered his voice to a whisper. "There is no happy ending here." I nodded, reflecting upon his words. What would it mean to be German after the war? What would it mean to be Prussian? I checked my watch. "We should wake the little one."
"I suppose. But I look at the boy, and I envy his quiet sleep. His innocence," said the old man.
"Where did he come from?" I asked.
"He wandered out of the woods. An address in Berlin was pinned to the front of his coat. But I wonder, who's waiting for the little lad? What if the address is an orphanage? He told Joanna that he was with his granny, but one day she didn't wake up.
I could feel my face moving, betraying my desire to remain unaffected. The old man nodded.
There's a saying, death hath a thousand doors to let out life. I shall find one. We all have a door that waits. I know that. I accept it. But the children, that's what I struggle with.
He shook his head.
Why the children?
But the boy is the reason you were given a pass for a ship. He was too young to go alone.
Yes, yes, I've thought about that. Perhaps the children are little cherubs, looking after withered men like me.
Which ship will you be on? I asked.
The Gustloff. And you?
He asked.
The Gustloff, I said.
We shared a quiet smile.
Amelia. I stared at a jar of cotton balls on the metal table. Small white clouds trapped in glass. I wanted to lift the lid and let them fly away with my secrets. I was still alive. Why? The doctor cleaned and examined the baby, while Joanna tended to me. You did very well, Amelia, she said, softly wiping the hair from my eyes. I stared into the bright ceiling lights until my eyes hurt. Everything hurt. My strength dissolved into exhaustion. Wasn't a person supposed to feel better after telling the truth? Perhaps there was no peace because Joanna hadn't understood, or hadn't heard me. Was it enough to admit the lie to yourself and the heavens? Or did you have to tell someone who listened? For months, I had done so well. Most days I actually believed my own story. Yes, August Kleist existed. He visited the farm for a while during my stay. He carried wood for me, climbed the ladder so I didn't have to, shared his plums, and defended me in front of his mother. He did it all because he was a kind person. But I didn't exist for him the way he existed for me. He left before it happened. It was a windless day in May when the Russians arrived at the farm. The air hung still, and their boots echoed on the stones as they approached. Mr. Kleist had broken his own arm to avoid recruitment into the People's Army. He claimed it was an accident, but I had peeked at his preparations in the barn. He was home in a sling the day the Russians arrived. Mrs. Kleist and her daughter, Elsa, came outside as the soldiers approached. Mrs. Kleist quickly told Elsa to go inside. But Elsa didn't move. Her feet seemed attached to the ground. I had been picking mushrooms in the forest and was hauling my baskets to the cold cellar. I hid behind a large tree. Mrs. Kleist carried the axe in the family, but I could see from my hiding place that her nerves were unsteady. Mr. Kleist talked too much when the Russians arrived. It annoyed them. They wanted food, vodka, wristwatches, and Elsa.
Uri, Uri, yes, said Mrs. Kleist.
Martin, give them your watch, immediately. A soldier took a step toward Elsa. Mr. Kleist began to whimper, but his wife stepped in quickly to negotiate.
No, this one, Kronk, Kronk.
She was telling the soldiers that Elsa was diseased.
We have one who is much prettier.
My blood thickened. My skin stung. No, she wouldn't.
Amelia! She yelled for me. She spotted my basket peeking out from behind the tree and commanded me forward. You see? So pretty. Very, very pretty. Take her instead. The soldiers looked at me with their dead faces. A trail of mushrooms spilled behind me as they dragged me to the cold cellar. Joanna carried the tiny swaddled baby over to my cot, cooing and kissing her head. The doctor approached as well.
She's quite small, but seems healthy. Have you chosen a name yet?
A name? I shook my head.
Ah, you understood. You do understand a bit of German. Wonderful. Well, you can think about a name. Good work, Joanna.
The doctor left the room. I was so tired. I closed my eyes and waited for the sound of death's key in the lock.
Florian. I would try to board early. A cute little boy and a hobbled old shoemaker might mask my arrival nicely. We left the theater and walked out into the road. The streets were alive, moving and swaying with hordes of people pushing toward the pier. Hungry dogs roamed and barked, abandoned by their masters because they weren't allowed on ships. Children, separated from their parents, wailed on the sidewalks, frantic and freezing. Some crouched in dark doorways of abandoned buildings, gnawing on moldy bread and the peels of sugar beets. The small boy clung to the shoe poet, who was having difficulties navigating the shoving mob. He swatted people's ankles with his walking stick to clear a path. "Up we go," I told the small boy. A pain in my wound surged as I lifted the boy onto my shoulders.
"Yes, wonderful idea," said the shoemaker. "Thank you."
The old man fell in step with another white-haired German.
"What do you hear?" asked poet. "On Christmas Eve, a German sub sank a troop ship in the English Channel. They say there were thousands of American soldiers on board who drowned."
Were Americans dying by the thousands as well? Nazi propaganda portrayed America as racially impure, a nation of mongrels, the land without a heart. The deep booming of an artillery shell rumbled in the distance. People in the crowd screamed and pushed forward. Women's faces were flaked with mud and ash, camouflaged from the Russians they'd applied while trekking through the woods. Refugees rummaged through deserted sleds and luggage.
"Take those boots," called the shoe poet to an old man picking through a pile. "They're better than your own."
The man nodded in acknowledgement. Stories spread through the packs of people as we walked. A woman ran to a girl near us.
"Hurry! Russian planes dropped phosphorus on a mass of refugees! It blinded them, and they had to roll in the snow!"
Whispers filtered that the Allies had cut off access roads and train routes. We were surrounded. The crowds became denser, more suffocating as we approached the port. Panicked refugees trembled as they lined up at registration stations. Babies were used as pawns, passed from one person to the next as they approached for registration. A woman grabbed my arm.
"How much for the kid? They won't let me on if I don't have a kid."
The wandering boy's legs tightened on my shoulders. "He's not for sale," I told her.
"Everyone has a price," she said.
"But clearly not everyone has a soul," said poet, raising his walking stick to the woman. "Step away from the child."
There appeared to be several checkpoints. No one was allowed through without a boarding pass. I unbuttoned my coat, enduring the freezing temperature, in order to allow the bloodstains on my shirt to be visible. I had another stain, of course. One that wasn't visible. Sippenhaft. Blood guilt. It was a law of the Nazi regime. If a family member had committed a crime or treason, his blood was considered bad. It was an old practice, holding family members responsible for the crime of a relative. My father made maps for the men who attempted to assassinate Hitler. He was taken to Berlin and hanged in the gallows of Plötzensee prison. And now I was smuggling Hitler's most prized treasure, along with a map and key to the Amber Room in my boot heel. There was no question. Beck Blood was bad. We approached the entrance to the harbor, cordoned off by a line of armed guards. A shiny black Mercedes slowly carved through the crowd. Soldiers moved a barrier and allowed the vehicle of well-dressed women and officers in uniform to pass. No, it wasn't. It couldn't be. That wasn't Gallite or Koch, was it? Anxiety played tricks with my mind. A soldier marched up and down the line of waiting passengers. "Have your papers and passes ready for inspection, please." A vein began to pulse at the base of my throat.
"Joanna," her words replayed in my head. "No, August. Russians. Frau Kleist. Take her. She prettier." My stomach rolled. How I hoped I was wrong. I looked over at Amelia, fast asleep on the cot. She had talked of August and the farm. Her face lit up when she spoke of him. But in the throes of labor, she had also screamed, "Liar," and pleaded for her mother to help her. I looked at the little bundle. She was perfect, asleep like her mama. Three more pregnant women had arrived and were resting comfortably in the makeshift maternity ward. Dr. Richter entered with another man in tow.
"Joanna, this is Dr. Vent. He just arrived from the Naval Medical Academy in Gdansk. He'll be joining us for the voyage."
Dr. Richter gestured to the baby.
"Joanna handled our first delivery this morning."
I shook the new doctor's hand. "I'm so glad you're here. I'm more comfortable assisting."
"Looks like you did a fine job," said Dr. Vent. "Boarding has begun and passengers are filing in as we speak," said Dr. Richter.
"When are we expected to sail?" I asked.
"Quite soon," he replied. "We'll have 7 expectant mothers and 162 wounded men. That could change, of course. If you see anything suspicious, we'll need to report it."
Suspicious. A perfect description of handsome Florian Beck. Where was he now, I wondered.
Amelia. I woke, disoriented. Joanna wanted me to move, to walk a bit. I didn't want to. I was finally warm. No one would bother me for a while. And I was so tired. I pulled the sheet up to my nose. She brought me pea soup and sat at my bedside. Whenever she left, she returned quickly. Joanna looked at me differently now. She understood. She knew. "The Prussian?" I asked, wondering about the night. "I don't know," she said. "You hope," I told her. She laughed. Her smile suddenly faded, and she looked straight at me. She leaned over my cot and took both of my hands in hers. Her eyes, filled with compassion, began to well up. Joanna then whispered the words I had waited so long to hear. I knew Mama would say them if she could, but Joanna spoke them, slowly and deliberately, clutching my hands between hers. "Amelia, I am so very sorry." My chin began to tremble. My throat tightened. I nodded, and warm tears spilled down my cheeks. "I'm sorry," she repeated, squeezing my hands. "Me too," I whispered.
Florian. We approach the embarkation officer, the wandering boy between us.
Well, hello there.
The officer spoke directly to the boy. Smart. Children spill the truth.
Hello, I'm Klaus.
Give me your papers, please, Klaus.
The shoemaker handed over the boy's papers, along with his own. I thrust mine out as well. The officer opened the old man's papers and looked at his pass. He leaned over and specifically addressed the boy.
And Klaus, who is this?
He asked, pointing to the shoemaker.
Opie,
replied the little boy. Grandpa. Yes, he was like a grandpa. That was a good reply.
And this gentleman?
He pointed to me. My name. No one knew my name except Joanna. What if he called me what the others did? The Prussian? Or the spy?
Uncle!
The boy smiled.
And what is Uncle's name?
The officer asked. The little boy turned to me and saluted, as he had on the road.
Herr Beck!
The officer laughed. The wandering boy thrust out his rabbit.
Mein Freund!
Looks like your friend lost an ear in battle. Might have to send him to the infirmary.
The officer turned to me and gestured to my shirt.
Looks like you lost some blood in the war yourself.
I nodded. Shrapnel. I buttoned up my coat to escape the cold.
Do you have a medical exemption?
He asked. Yes. He handed back our papers. Proceed to the next embarkation point. He had looked at my papers, but only glanced at my boarding pass. We walked into the harbor. Every inch of the dock was covered with soldiers, supply trucks, passengers, and luggage. There were entry lines for each ship and additional lines for each gangway. The boy bounced on his toes.
Yes, it's quite exciting, said the shoe poet. And I believe that ship, in basin number 9, the very big one, is ours.
The Gustloff was the most imposing ship in the harbor. Her build was clearly that of a leisure cruise ship. Several decks, lots of places to hide. I spied anti-aircraft guns positioned on the deck. The ship was armed.
Hey! Hey, you!
The giant woman yelled and gestured to us through the crowd.
Well, hello there, Ava,
the shoe poet waved.
Boy, you're lucky ducks. I was just about to throw your bags off.
The little boy ran and grabbed the shoemaker's carpet bag.
Well done, Ava. Thank you, said the old man.
You have no idea how I suffered for this stuff, waiting in the cold. And why? None of you cared enough to wait for our wagon.
Enough about the luggage. Did you get registered for a ship, dear?
Asked Poet.
Yes, yes. I'm on that one. Hansa, she said. Which one are you on?
The little boy pointed to the Gustloff. Ava looked at me and laughed.
You too, huh? I wonder how you managed that. I'm going to board. I'm freezing and it stinks like rotten death. Here, take Joanna her suitcase. I know she'll want it. Tell her I said goodbye. She was the only one of you that I liked. Sorry.
She set the case at my feet.
Well, nice knowing you.
Wait. I grabbed her by the coat. What are the next lines for? I asked.
Inspection, she said. They're examining everyone's luggage.
Joanna. Amelia pretended to sleep. I had to raise her spirits. The baby would need to nurse. She had to hold and feed her baby. If she didn't, the doctors might become suspicious. If they figured out she wasn't Latvian, Dr. Richter would report her. I would be held responsible for smuggling her on. My stomach turned. A woman approached. Excuse me, miss,
There's someone in the hallway who would like to speak with you. The sailor Alfred paced through the corridor. Hello, Alfred. I decided to ask. Have you seen my patient today? The one from the movie house?
No, I haven't. But I'll keep an eye out for him, he said.
Please let me know if you see him. He shifted from one foot to another, rubbing the tangle of raw meat that was his hands. Oh, Alfred, your hands, I said.
Actually, I didn't come about my hands. I came... Well, what I wanted to say. I have been informed that you have a suitor, but I'm well acquainted with the long-distance love affair. You would do well to take a stroll with me on the promenade deck later this evening. We can discuss our sweethearts back at home.
He grinned.
Tell me, do you like butterflies, Fraulein?
What was he talking about? Was he asking me on a date? Oh, no. Kissing Alfred would be like chewing a mouthful of crackers. I shook off the thought. Well, Alfred, I think we'll all be extremely busy before we sail. I don't think I'll have time to take a walk. Honestly, I'd be surprised if you had time either.
Dr. Richter approached. Joanna, could you assist me, please? The girls have just arrived from the sanatorium. We need to determine where to put them. Perhaps you could help them get settled?
The doctor looked at Alfred.
What are you doing here? Documenting the medical procedures of the evacuation, sir, said Alfred. Someone must verify that work is actually being done.
He turned on his heel and strode off.
Florian. The temperature hovered near zero, but I was sweating. Luggage inspection. I watched the flow of passengers approach the front of the line. Most of the discussions were about items too large to take on board. Antiques, furniture, expensive carpets. And then I saw them. Wooden crates, similar to so many I had carefully belted and fastened, stood in stacked rows, surrounded by armed guards. Of course. The Nazis were not only boarding passengers. They were loading their looted art and treasure onto the ships. My curiosity burned. What was in the crates? People cried when their large items were refused. I carried only Joanna's small suitcase and my pack. The little boy had no luggage, the shoe poet only a carpet bag and his shoe repair kit. I was about to give Joanna's suitcase to poet when an armed sentry corralled us into line.
Step ahead. Make room, please.
German efficiency worked against me. They were fast. Before I could finalize a plan, we were at the front of the line with our papers. The guard behind the table was older, seasoned. He flipped through the identity papers, examining our photos against our faces. Another soldier walked around us, examining our belongings. The older guard behind the desk then looked at our boarding passes. He pointed to the shoemaker and the boy.
You two, proceed to the gangway.
He then pointed at me.
You, proceed to the table behind me. Additional inspection.
Additional inspection. My heart punched in my chest. I had forgotten to open my coat to display my wound. I acted like I was reaching for papers and released the buttons. Brittle cold rushed in around my torso. I hoped it would mask my perspiration, my desperation. I prayed the inspection officer would be a booby like the sailor I had duped. He wasn't. He was in his late 20s, blonde, with fair, almost waxen skin. He looked like one of Hitler's prized Aryans from the propaganda posters. He leaned back, teetering on his chair in a long oilskin coat, basking within his power and authority. Two other soldiers stood nearby, hanging on his every word, laughing when they were supposed to. I approached the table and set down the suitcase. My pack hung on my back behind me. In it were pistols, ammunition, forgery materials, my notebook, and the Führer's most beloved treasure, the Amber Swan. The blonde officer leaned forward. His chair fell to the dock with a thud.
Papers.
I handed him my identity card and the boarding pass.
What's in your suitcase?
He asked. It's not mine. I'm delivering it to my nurse on board. It belongs to her.
Your nurse? My, my, you have your own private nurse.
He looked to the soldier on his right.
This one has his own nurse.
I bet he does.
The soldier laughed.
Looks like you need a nurse.
He pointed a pencil at my blood-stained shirt.
Show me.
Excuse me?
Let's see this bad wound that requires a personal nurse. I think I may want one myself. I need to see what's required.
I quickly lifted my shirt and revealed the massive gash. The officer twisted his face.
Nasty. The skin's nearly grown over the stitch. Might be too late to take them out.
What's the name of the nurse you say is on board? I hesitated. It wasn't fair. I didn't want to implicate her.
Joanna Vilkas, I said quietly.
The other soldiers whistled.
Litvinka!
What? I didn't understand. The inspection officer laughed.
It's the nickname for your pretty Lithuanian nurse. There aren't many female personnel on board, so we've named them all.
He leaned back on his chair again.
I think there's something missing here.
Sweat beaded beneath my hairline.
You have civilian papers, and you're trying to get on a ship. Yet you're an able-bodied young man who could be serving the Reich.
I leaned forward and stared him down. I am serving. I pulled the additional paperwork from my coat pocket and threw it on the table. He laughed and began narrating for his buddies.
Let's see, fellas. Here we have an official medical testimony signed by Litvinka. Such a pretty signature she has. Shrapnel. Oh, and deaf in one ear, too. That's convenient. Let's see what other love notes he's got.
He opened the thick cream paper, saw the seal at the top, and stopped talking. He scanned through the letter and looked up at me, angry.
When you are asked for papers, you are to provide all of your papers.
I allowed all of the ferocity of the past years to rise up inside me. Like a boiler about to blow, I leaned over the table. I will be happy to tell Galiter Koch that you unnecessarily held his injured courier in the freezing cold, delaying his mission, and wasting the services of a nurse he himself arranged. Koch's mood of late hasn't been very forgiving. He stared back at me, wanting desperately to jump the table for a fight. Part of me hoped it would come to fists. I wanted to batter this blonde idiot senseless. He pushed the stack of papers back at me and gave a nod toward the gangway. Adrenaline charged through me. I wanted to knock his teeth out more than I wanted to board the ship. I stuffed my papers away and buttoned my coat.
Say hi to Litvinka for us.
He whistled to the guard at the gangway and pointed to me.
That one's going to the infirmary.
I felt his eyes on me, following my steps up the gangway and into the ship.
Alfred. Fulfilling a woman's request swayed emotions, giving a man the upper hand. Hannelore's heart always seemed to soften when I brought her sweets or swept the sidewalk. Yes, if I wanted to bait the pretty nurse, I must fulfill her request. I would find the young recruit. I walked through the halls, looking for the tall rogue. If he were on board, he would be easy to find. There weren't many men his age in civilian clothes.
Frick!
Someone called to me from a group. We need you to issue life vests! I put my hand up in protest. My apologies, gentlemen! I'm on an important assignment!
Bettina, sir,
the sailor replied. They all laughed. bedwetter. I scraped at my hands. They would be sorry they had laughed.